Today on The Grave Talks, Exposure to the Dead, a conversation with Dennis Blazer and Chris Paul. Knowing his grandfather was still present even after his tragic death, that was the initial experience that drew Dennis Blazer into the paranormal. Exposure to the idea of the paranormal through media is what drew Chris Paul in. Together, the two have embarked on countless journeys through the country, trying to identify the dead and communicate with them. Today, we hear their stories on investigating the dead.
Well, my first experience was probably when I was about 20. My grandfather had killed himself in his shed in the garage. And I just remember feeling like he was there for days on end, like you could just feel his presence. That didn't really get me interested at that time. But what got me interested is when my grandmother passed away, she passed away in my mom's house. And my wife and I went to go visit them in Oklahoma. And when I went in there I got up in the middle of the night to get some food. And I was walking by and she had this one chair she always sat on all the time. And when I came back with the food, I seen her sitting there and it freaked me out so bad. And I ran all the way back to where my wife was. And it scared me to death because I didn't know what to do. And only because, are you familiar with the Smurfs at all?
I can't say I've been asked that before in an interview, but I did watch it in the 80s sometimes. I couldn't tell you the names of all the Smurfs anymore, but I do know what the Smurfs are.
Okay, well, my grandmother looked a lot like Gargamel. Okay. You know, she had one little scraggly tooth left. She always wore a house gown.
Okay.
And that's probably one of the reasons that it freaked me out so bad is just because I wasn't expecting it. And after that moment forward, I just needed to know if there's life after death. I needed to know. So I started doing my own little thing. And, you know, eventually I made a group with Chris here. And that's probably what triggered me the most.
Prior to that, and Chris, I want to get to you in a moment to ask you your story. But Denny, I want to ask you a few more questions about your experiences. When you had that initial feeling in the garage after your grandfather had taken his life and you're standing in there, what up to that point, what was your belief system in ghosts or energies or anything like that? What was going through your mind as far as accepting that sort of thing as being, you know, a possibility, being part of our world?
Well, I was always raised in a church, so I always believed in the human soul.
Okay.
But the main thing was that just seeing him laying there with, you know, he had shot himself with a shotgun, so it was pretty morbid. But I just remember, you know, thinking that he didn't move on yet. He hasn't gone up. And I just felt such remorse in the whole area that I was in. Like, I think everybody felt it. And for whatever reason, you know, the night before he took his life, he came in to my room because I was staying with him for a little bit and said, "Dennis, I just want to let you know I love you and I hope everything works out for you." And I didn't think anything about it. Yeah. You know, the next day there he was in the garage.
Yeah.
And it just really, really blew my mind. And, you know, it was just weird. And it just, you know, it's one of those things you never expect.
Was it discussed at all amongst family members that others were having that feeling too? I mean, it's one of those things where it's such a crazy difficult time and everybody's coping and handling it all a little bit differently. But was that brought up at all in that moment?
Yeah, it was. I mean, we all kind of talked about it, just saying, you know, it feels like he's here right now.
Yeah.
You know, you get the goosebumps and stuff, and that it lasted several days. It wasn't just one day or, yeah, you know, just that time. But when my mom and dad, they came from Oklahoma to Wisconsin because my grandfather passed away in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Everybody just felt it. It was like just, it was more of a feeling of love, but yet at the same time, remorse. Like you could just feel how horrible he felt about it.
Yeah. Did it lift at some point?
I'm sorry?
Did it seem to lift at some point, that feeling?
Yes, it did. About 3 days.
Okay.
You know, we had the funeral. I would say right about the time the funeral happened, we didn't feel it anymore.
Okay.
And it was just, it was an incredible feeling.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
just the whole thing.
People know that feeling of an individual. You know, sometimes, you know, when we're talking about the living, I can be here in my office and I can have someone standing out on my porch. And so, and I don't consider myself as sensitive at all, but I mean, this is just an example of just human feeling. You can almost sometimes tell just who's around you, you know, especially those that are close to you. Before someone even opens the door, I could guess that feels like my daughter's out there. It feels like my wife is out there. It feels like this or that person's out there, depending on how close you are. So I totally understand how you can feel and identify the feeling of an individual, even though they may no longer physically be there. With your grandmother and the fact that you saw her, and the Smurf analogy, did any others at that moment in time have any interactions or any experiences of her from beyond the grave?
I never have, other than the one time I seen her in the chair. And then I had a dream about her one time where I wasn't doing so good in my life at one point, and you know, just I was just run down, and my grandmother came to me in a dream and said, "Dennis, you're better than this. Pick it up, get yourself together, and turn your life around." Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what I did. I took her advice, and it just seemed so real that I had to follow her advice. And it was just really weird that happened. But that's the only time that I've ever had any interactions with her.
What's been the reaction if you've talked about this with your family members? Have you brought this up with them and said, you know, I've felt her presence. I've seen her before. I've had her come to me in dreams. Did you get any sort of reaction from them if you asked that?
You know, when my mom was alive, this was, I think, in 2007 when this happened. And I told my mom, "Mom, I had a crazy experience. I seen grandma sit in a chair last night." It's like, "Oh yeah, I see her all the time." That's the reaction I got from her. Like, "Oh, all right." I wasn't expecting her to say that. I thought she would tell me I was crazy.
Sure.
You know, and she totally believed it, you know, cause she had seen her around too.
So very accepting of the fact that this is the experience that you were having. And that, yeah, you're not alone in it, but it's almost just so normal for her that it wasn't a shock by any stretch of the imagination. I'm curious, because I always have to ask this specifically of Wisconsin. Where in Wisconsin are you? Where was this going on at? Where are you from?
Milwaukee.
Okay.
I'm down in Milwaukee. I know you're from Wisconsin. Yep. I don't know where you're from, what state, what town you are.
About an hour north of you in Fond du Lac is where I grew up.
Oh, all right. So, yeah. Fun luck.
Yep.
Yeah,
and Sean, who co-hosts on our other podcast, Dark Side of Wikipedia, he grew up in Milwaukee. So not that it's all a right. small town that everybody's going to know each other, but obviously it's just kind of fun to learn where everybody's from. Chris, let's jump over to you. Same initial question to you. Your origin story on this, when you look back, what's your earliest memory of finding some interest in the paranormal?
Really an easy question to answer, Tony. My situation, very different than most people's. As a young boy of maybe 8-9 years old, my mother used to work kind of a second shift job. And when she would come home, she'd watch a Johnny Carson show. Now, I know I'm really dating myself here by bringing up the Carson show. I'm closer in age, let's say, to Tony Spira and John Zaffis than I am to your typical investigator on TV. We'll leave that at that.
Sure.
But this night on the Carson show, they had someone on, and I don't remember who it was at this point, but they were showing ghost pictures. Scared the crap out of me. But it set the hook.
Yeah.
And ever since then, I was always interested, always curious. I would hear all these kind of stories. I had a grandmother who had what she would call visions. I don't think my grandmother was psychic, but she used to tell about visions on a given day. And that kind of sparked the interest, and I've been in and out ever since. My first actual, how can I term this, paranormal teacher, so to speak. I don't have a scientific background. My first teacher in things paranormal was a retired spiritualist minister.
Okay.
They talk to the dead all the time. That's all they do. And it's a totally different perspective than your typical investigator's perspective.
So you've had this as part of your life for a very long time, in terms of not necessarily having, you know, the personal experience of a deceased grandmother or grandfather showing up, but just the overall surrounding and the concepts of these things being real, being factual, just being part of life.
Correct.
Interesting.
Correct. So, it's way different than most people.
Sure. Everybody. And,
after my experience with the minister, a few years later, I had a similar experience with a trance medium.
Tell me about that.
I'm sorry.
Tell me about that experience.
Well, the thing that is, Tony, is when you're first getting into the field and you've been learning things from people on the other side of the fence, so to speak, if that makes sense, it really gives you a different perspective and a different understanding of how maybe this stuff is supposed to work. Because there's so many things out there, and to this day, although I think it's getting better, where you just can't scientifically prove certain things.
Sure.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah, it's interesting. When you say you can't scientifically prove things, some may say we're on the cusp of being able to prove some of these things. Others will say, you know, it will always be kind of just a gray area where those who want to accept it will accept it or won't accept it. Where do you feel that we're at? Do you feel we're getting closer to some of these things being irrefutably proven, or do you think some of these things that we're going to be talking about will just kind of forever be out there, if you will, and never really be able to truly scientifically be accepted?
Well, as things are going, and with the advances in paranormal equipment, shall we say, I think we're closer now than what we ever have been in the past. If we're ever going to get 100%, probably not. But I think people, for most part, are much more accepting now than they were, let's say, 20 years ago.
Sure. I think that makes some sense. Tell me more about. Let's jump back over here. And talk to Dennis. Tell me about how you guys came together as a group, in terms of being interested in the paranormal, and then beginning to dig deeper into that realm. How did that all start for you guys?
Well, it's kind of funny. We were both in a different group at one point. I'm not going to mention the group, but
sure.
We ended up. Well, actually, we're in two different groups, to tell you the truth. We decided to make our own group at one point because we wanted to specialize in some other things as far as communication and such. And we have traveled all over the place doing investigations, and we've had great, we call them spirit sessions, where we are able to contact or make contact with the other side. Mm-hmm. And just different things that we've done. I mean, we've been cussed out by spirits. We have had actual communications with spirits. It's pretty amazing stuff. And I still don't have an answer as to who we're talking to, but I know that we're talking to somebody.
How did it begin for you when you say you don't know who you're talking to, but you're talking to somebody? Obviously, there's many ways of trying to communicate with the other side. What were some of the initial ways that you guys began to do that, and what were some of the results?
We started with, doing your standard EVP, obviously, but we also use devices such as REM pods. We use different types of apps. We also use a DR60. We have
Panda box.
We have probably like 6-7 different methods that we'll work our way up to try to get even better results. And we record them all, and some of them have to be decoded later because, it's still broken up. But some of them are we can communicate right there on the spot.
Tell me about your first experience like that with being able to communicate on the spot, because you talk about it almost like, we communicate on the spot. Like this is just almost an expected thing. Like that's going to work or happen. And it's not always the case with everybody. How did that go? How did that go for you the first time? What sort of questions were you asking? Where were you? What was that investigation like?
Are you familiar with Riverside Cemetery in Appleton?
Is that Kate Blood Cemetery?
Is it what?
The one with Kate Blood.
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Because I grew up in the Fox Valley, and the only cemetery I'm somewhat familiar with in Appleton is that one. Chad Lewis and I went through there about probably 15 years ago on a live broadcast on radio in the area. And he told me about the Kate Blood story, and we walked along a riverbank, and there was the stations of the cross, but they were all vacant, and relics had all been buried and blessed because it had been used for nefarious acts over the years. But it's creepy seeing these altars in the woods. That would be the only cemetery in that area that I'm aware of. Maybe it's the one, maybe it's not. You could tell me more than I could.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that.
Okay.
One of the very first sessions we did together with the different devices we use, Chris was using his DR60, and we were walking along, and we sat on what was like a stone bench. Mm-hmm. And Chris had asked, "Who are we talking to?" And the reply was Ed. And Chris like, "Wait a minute." And he gets up, looks, and it's Edward something or other. They're like, "Holy shit." So then he asks, "We're not here to harm you or hurt you or make you go away. We just want to communicate with you." And we play it back, and it says, "Bullshit," like that. Mm-hmm. And then he asks, "Is there anything we can do for you?" And it's like, "Yeah, you need to leave now."
Wow.
Yeah, so I mean, it's stuff like that. That's probably the first one that I really, really knew that there's something going on. I mean, it was like a direct connection to the person that we were talking to. And there's other cemeteries that we've had the same actions. We've been to paranormal investigations where we've just got amazing hits. We've heard screams, like just bellowing from nowhere. And it's kind of amazing when it happens.
Oh, I'm sure it is. I mean, as you go into this and you're investigating and you're having these experiences, I mean, you had some of those childhood experiences, but out there investigating and you're hearing these screams and you're getting this audio picked up on EVPs. now it's become you've a little more accustomed to it. You've experienced it a time or two or more. But initially, what's going through your mind as you're having these things show up?
You know, I just want to learn the truth. I want to learn what's going on, what we're capable of accomplishing through this, because everything is a learning experience for us. Mm-hmm. Every time we go there, go to a place, I want to learn. I want to hear. I want to feel for myself. I get very excited when it happens, and it's addicting is what it is. It's like a rush that you'll, I don't know if I can explain the type of rush, but it's like a jogger's high when you're jogging. Mm-hmm. That's what it is to me.
What's your goal when you go into an investigation? And obviously it can be different depending on if it's a residential, someone's home who needs help, or just an open location that's open for, you know, going and investigating that people know it has activity at it. But when we're talking about someone whose home may be haunted, who's being troubled by something, and you get a call saying, hey, I know you guys are investigators. What can you do for me? What is your goal in that sort of a setup?
Our goal is to figure out what's going on, debunk what we can, and tell the truth. One home we went to out in, I believe it was Ripon, okay. We got a call, and it was a dire emergency for the person. She was saying that there was pots and pans being knocked around and everything else. So we drove out there, you know, it was a good hour and a half or whatever. Mm-hmm. We got out there about 3 o'clock in the morning, and we started doing our investigation. Nothing happened. We couldn't find a thing wrong. Right when we were packing up, getting ready to leave, we could hear the stuff happening. I believe Chris went up there, upstairs, because that's where it was happening, and you could hear it going on, and he finds a cat in the wall. And that's what was causing all the commotion for this lady, was a cat.
Her cat or just some random cat?
What's that?
Her cat or just some random cat that showed up?
It was her cat, and she had no clue how it was getting in there or anything. It was like a little hole or whatever in the wall where it was getting in, but it was creating all sorts of havoc for her. And we just kind of told her what she needed to patch it up and her problem would go away. And I don't know if she did or not, but we were able to explain what was going on to her, because she was really scared. They weren't even sleeping in their bedroom anywhere. They were sleeping downstairs in their living room. So I was glad to be able to help somebody that way, you know, at least give them an explanation as to why, and that it's not a haunting.
And that's important. So it's not always being assumed that this is a haunting. You got to get in there, and it's not like you're trying to debunk, but if that's the answer, that's the answer. Do you ever run into situations where you're finding evidence like that, like a cat or something else, where maybe it's a water heater or something, and you come to the owner and you say, look, here's what we really think this is. We don't think it's a ghost, but they still stick with the idea that their house is haunted?
I've come across that. I mean, I've done investigations where we had proof where that there were mice in the walls running around. And we explain it to them, like, no, I know it's my ex-boyfriend, you know, well, three of her ex-boyfriends, because they had all passed. And it's just, no, I know it's one of them, they're haunting me, and it's, no, I really think it's mice in your walls. So, I mean, it's stuff like that have happened, that, you know, you can debunk it, you can say what's going on, and you just kind of move on from there, you know, and if they don't like it, they don't like it. But, you know, you do the best you can. And like I say, you always tell the truth and you tell them what you believe.
Chris, what for you has been one of the more, I guess, and I'm not trying to just pun this here, but more haunting locations that you guys have visited, that you've had experiences at, that you walked away from going, that wasn't mice, that wasn't cats, there's something else going on here, and what went down?
You want to?
Well, I can think of a couple of really good locations that I really enjoyed being at, Tony, where the amount of activity would just blow your mind, and you didn't have to work to get it. Those are always the really good ones. Let me give you some examples. Maystringer House, Brooksville, Florida. Very active location. Goldfield High School, Goldfield, Nevada. Very active location. But there's other ones out there too. But you get certain locations that are just alive when you get there, it seems. Mm-hmm. And from my perspective on it, you're the connection. I get asked sometimes, what's the best recorder to have for this? Should I use this app? Should I use that app? My experience tells me that you're the connection. Doesn't matter what kind of recorder you're using most of the time.
Sure.
You've got to have, and I, you know, is it a... You know, we're going to get into a conversation going way over the end here somewhere, because is it, you know, your aura, the way spirits see them? Is it your energy, the way you feel to them? It, you know, I mean, I could present, you know, we could play 20 questions on this and we still wouldn't have the answer. Mm-hmm. So we have to get, you know, a little theoretical sometimes.
Sure.
Sure. But you're the connection. Not your equipment.
More so, they're more so reaching out based on how they feel comfort with you, more so than they do, you know, just what sort of equipment you are showing off or attempting to communicate with, is what you're saying.
Correct. Sometimes, in the amount of sessions that I've done over the years, and I've done them in multiple states. Sometimes it's like spirit just wants to be heard. Mm-hmm. Through the course of sessions, and when I say sessions, I mean spirit sessions. That's what we call them. There are times I always ask, is there something that I can do for you? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times I've just gotten the answer, no.
They're
is
just
there something that I can do to help you? No.
When you have that and you have this answer of no, there's nothing you can do to help me, what comes to mind? What are you thinking at that point? So many people have this mindset that, oh, they're there for a reason, that we're meant to somehow come together, and then the typical one is, oh, to help them pass on or something of that nature. And I don't always subscribe to that by any means. Are some just there and, you know, you happen to cross paths with them, but, you know, you're really not meant to. You just let each other kind of be?
I think some of them are just there. I think there's a lot of places that have probably got a spiritual inhabitant, but I wouldn't necessarily call it a haunting.
Okay.
I don't know if that makes sense, but you know, how are we going to classify a haunting? You know, banging on the walls, things moving, lights flickering, or is it just that you can go into a place and communicate with someone?
When you have that and you can go in and just communicate with someone, is it always something that the building is haunted, or their people are kind of coming and going just as they are in real life? And you just happen to have caught them in a specific location at a specific time.
I think a little bit of both.
Yeah.
I mean, there are places where, you know, they've got their resident spirits, shall we say, but some of these other areas, it's kind of like going to the mall. Who's ever walking down the hallway, mm-hmm. You know, and if they want to communicate, and I mean, as you know, I'm sure, how many EVPs are just gotten in the course of normal conversation?
Sure.
You know, we've gotten tons of them. And is this just somebody sees us, they're passing by, and they throw their two cents in? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like when you're at the party and everybody's there and people just start throwing their two cents in. I think there's a lot of that out there. I don't think that everything's a demon. I don't think that everything's negative. You know, I mean, that's all you see on TV. Demon, 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 demon.
Yeah.
No, that has not been my experience at all.
I would agree. I mean, I think the demon thing gets overblown sometimes. It obviously sells and makes people somewhat more interested in the topic, but certainly overdone than what reality is. What would you say? I mean, in terms of your investigation out there and investigating out there, have you ever, though, come across something where you felt, you know, maybe this is something dark? Maybe this is, in fact, a demon or something that just, you know, is fairly negative.
The most negative experience that I've ever had was getting punched once.
Okay.
Not touched, punched. And I'll admit, that's the only time I was ever freaked out. Because I've been touched, I've been brushed up on. When we were at Conover Square in Illinois, something grabbed my ass at one point. And I even turned around and said, "Did you?" You know, and everybody's looking at me like, "No, not me, not me." Okay. But to physically get punched, I would take that as a negative.
Sure.
I was in Wisconsin. I won't say where because I don't want every teenager in the state going to this location this weekend, you know?
I understand that. When it comes to hauntings, and I'll throw this out there for both of you guys to answer. There's a lot, obviously, every area of the country has its urban legends, has its stories of, you know, this is haunted. There's this bridge. There's that road. There's that house. There's those sort of things. How often do you guys dig into the legends of an area to go and not necessarily debunk, but just to see factually what happens, if anything at all?
But we do try to read up on things and try to do a little internet research on things to kind of get a flavor of what's going on. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we'll be fortunate enough to talk to somebody that's been there and maybe experienced something, but most times that is not the case.
That wraps up our conversation with Dennis Blazer and Chris Paul. Part one, anyway. Part two of the conversation picks up and we'll ask, are there specific types of locations that tend to be more haunted than others? What were the spirits looking for in Goldfield, Nevada when Dennis and Chris investigated? What type of messages are the spirits giving to investigators in Goldfield? What's the recipe to be a good receptor for messages from the dead? Does everyone who participates in a paranormal investigation need to believe in spirits to have something happen? And how does Dennis involve his children in his paranormal investigation? Until next time for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.